Welcome to the Fire and Earth Podcast with your hosts, Jason Mefford and Kathy Groover. Fire and Earth, giving you the keys to unlock your limitless potential.
Welcome to another episode of the Fire and Earth Podcast. I'm your co-host, Jason Mefford.
And I'm Kathy Groover, and I am so excited to welcome another fabulous guest, a very dear friend of mine, Dr. Christina Donaldson. Woo! Yay! All right, so, Doctor... That's so weird calling you doctor.
Doctor
Groover would like to welcome Dr. Donaldson. And then there's Jason. Master Medford. Oh, yeah. Master Mefford. Oh, I like that. Okay. So, Christina. Oh, it's weird calling you that too. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, who you are and what you do, and then we'll get into our what is going to be a really cool conversation.
Awesome. I was thinking our band name could be Dr. Jason.
Oh, doctor.
Doctor. I know, right? Okay, so when I'm not trying to be funny in my everyday life, I am a clinical psychologist. I am licensed in California. I see a wide range of clients. I work with kids all the way to senior citizens. However, technically, my specialty is in adolescent psychology. I am also an affiliate professor at Antioch University, and currently, I am the acting director of clinical training there for the PsyD program in Santa Barbara. And I have lots of fun little hobbies that I do. I love to dance. I love film. I love storytelling. And I'm just really passionate about the mental health field and just want to kind of be a part of a conversation. So I'm really grateful that you both invited me on your show today. Thank you.
Yeah, it's so important. And, you know, we've got the news outlets, and we were talking about a little bit about that before we got on the air. But it was interesting because I actually saw an interview with Marianne Williamson, who, as we know, is running for president. I don't know if she's going to make it through the next round of debates. I don't know that she'd make a very good president. I've known of her work for years. But she raised a really good point. We were talking about, they were talking about the whole gun thing, and everybody's blaming mental illness for this rather than the fact that the guns are the problem. And we can go back and forth on a debate about that. But one of the things she said was, there is a natural human condition. And if you just got divorced, if you just had a death in the family, if you just lost a child, if you just whatever, where you're going to have these highs and these lows. It doesn't necessarily mean that you need to be vastly medicated for all of these daily human conditions. So I heard that interview the other night. I think she's got some really great stuff to say. I wish you had more time to say the things that you would want to say, as I think a lot of candidates. But she brought up this whole mental wellness concept, and how there's a huge difference between mental illness, where you do really seriously need to be medicated, and these daily human condition. So I wanted to kind of throw that out as a seed, because I think that's talking about the media and talking about daily life versus these issues that we have. I think most people forget that. They forget that my father just died. Of course I'm going to be depressed. I don't need to be medicated for that. That's the natural human response to losing someone you care about.
Well, I think too, so our culture is very black and white. It's either all or nothing. Mm-hmm. And the thing about mental well-being is it's a spectrum. So at one point, we're all going to fall on the mental illness spectrum, in the sense where we're going to feel at ill with certain things that are going on, or in other words, at dis-ease. And so, for example, some people, when they do lose their father, and they're broken and devastated, it can trigger other events that make the grief even harder. And so they may actually need to go on medication for a temporary time just to get through, and some don't. And that's where I think people's perspective of mental wellness is all or nothing. And what I'm hoping to kind of provide some education on is it's a spectrum. And there's different ways that we can work towards getting more towards the health end, where we feel like we can manage and cope. And if we can't, there's tools. One of the tools is medication. It's not the only tool, but I think there's a lot of stigma around medication. And so people aren't willing to take it, but it might be the thing that they need in order to find relief for the short period of time. So, you know, but again, this conversation, which is why I'm so grateful that you both are having me on the show, is this conversation's not happening. It's either they're ill or they're this or they're that, or, you know, and it's like, no, it's a spectrum, people. It's 50 Shades of Grey.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a spectrum, and I even think too, you know, that a lot of people still don't want to really admit the big issue that we do have, you know, because there is kind of a stigma around, you know, mental illness, or I like that term, mental wellness. We should all be trying to be mentally well. I love that. Mm-hmm. But where there isn't so much around the physical illness, right? I mean, we've kind of gotten used to that. It's like, oh, you take a pill, you have a surgery, you do whatever. It's like, there doesn't seem to be as much of a stigma with the physical illness, but there still is with the mental. And I think, again, I mean, that's why we want to talk about this stuff, because it affects all of us. And it's not, you know, stress levels are up. You've got all these different things that are helping to cause that. And people need to learn how to cope with that. And I think even be open and realize that, hey, you know what? I don't have my shit together either. Right. I mean, it's like we all, like you said, it's that 50 shades of gray spectrum, right? I mean, it's like it's all over the place. And we all end up in going through this roller coaster of life, but we need to develop or learn the tools and mechanisms to help us get through that. Right. And it's not always
absolutely.
And it's not always turning to, you know, a lot of people with addictive behaviors have turned to that addictive behavior to try to manage whatever pain they have instead of using some of these other ways to cope.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then it makes people that actually have neurological disorders, which they're contemplating putting schizophrenia in that category, ashamed and not able to go get help and to not take medication. And their brain is just completely wired differently. And then they end up homeless and can potentially end up homeless and without any resources. And, you know, it becomes an issue for all of us. You know, it's actually quite joyful to see people that do have these struggles actually able to function in our society, because they have to work really hard, harder than anybody else on this planet, because of the pain. And being psychotic is so painful for the brain. Like, one of my clients described it as like her brain is boiling. It physically hurts, as well as, you know, because she can't trust what's real. Everything's around her is melting. Voices are telling her. And it's like for her to every day to try to figure out, okay, no, that's a voice. This is reality. Mm-hmm. I mean, she has to work really hard. And yet people with that kind of an illness are totally stigmatized and portrayed horribly in the media and in Hollywood, you know?
And it doesn't help that, I mean, we are having these mass shootings and everybody's talking about the mentally ill. And, you know, it's like, and someone had a really good point. They said, yeah, other countries have people dealing with mental illness that aren't shooting everybody. So, you know, it's like, it's not just, I mean, that contributes to it. Certainly, clearly there's something broken in you that's going to cause you to take an automatic weapon and open fire onto a school or a nightclub, or there's clearly something happening there.
Correct.
But if you didn't have access to that weapon that could take out 400 people, that, you know, so, I mean, it's an interesting conversation. But before we got on the air, we were talking about the media and how that's adding to our stress. And we started to have an interesting conversation about that. So I want to circle back to that so that everyone that's listening can be part of that dialogue that we were having.
That'd be awesome. Do you want me to
go for it, Tina?
Okay. I was trying to figure out, I was like, are you going to bring it up? Am I going to bring it up?
Well, because it's almost interesting, because when you brought up your client about, you know, her not knowing what's real and what's not, I think there's a tie-in to that media discussion.
There is.
Or that I think can kind of get us started there, right?
Right. And so what is fascinating to bridge that, so what I do with my client that has schizophrenia is we work on what is real. And she worked really hard to try to differentiate, you know, this is what I see, you know, and sometimes it's visual hallucination, sometimes it's audio. Mm-hmm. And what is happening, and she can't watch the news. Like she just has to be very careful with stimulation. Like she knows that, and she knows the cost that it'll do, and she's not willing to do that. So she works really hard. The thing that's happening, and this is what I'm seeing with a lot of my clients with a variety of mental triggers, whether it's anxiety, depression, bipolar, the news is giving them more anxiety or more depression, in the sense where they feel more hopeless, helpless, out of control, panicked. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is because when I recently watched the news, there's so many people on the news giving their opinions. And the thing that we need to keep in mind is our thoughts and our beliefs are not facts. And that's where people get really confused. And that's where the area of cognitive behavioral therapy is really popular for treatment, is we're trying to work with people's thoughts for them to recognize that they don't have to be run by their thoughts because their thoughts are not facts. So for example, if you hear yourself and you're thinking going, oh my God, every time I do this, it always happens this way. Well, that's a distortion, because if you were to really pick apart every single time this event happened, did it always, like every single time, come up that way? Chances are no, but the mind likes to kind of lump it in and generalize. And so that's where one of the things I do is I really work with people on separating out who they are with their thoughts and their feelings and their behavior. Because the truth is the essence of who a human being is separate from their thoughts, their feelings, or their behavior. Mm-hmm. But we in our culture do not talk about this. And I think this is where the problem is media. Everyone, and now that we have 24-hour news source of many different types of news, everybody's on there to fill time is giving people's opinions, but it's not facts. I mean, even before we have, what is it, like even a speech, people are on there giving their opinions of what they think the speech is going to be like, just right, to fill time.
Right. And they spend an hour afterwards recounting the speech that I just watched. It's like, I heard the speech. I don't need your opinion on the speech. Yeah. I know.
Right.
Yeah, and I agree. I think the 24-hour news cycle is one of the big problems in our society. And when I was working on the Us Versus Them book and the Us Versus Them, the TEDx that I just did, that's one of the things I talk about, is you can turn on any channel that supports your belief only. And we're not getting factual news. We're getting either side of the spectrum that you can only hear what backs your opinion, and you never have to hear the other side presented to you in a rational, reasonable way. And I think that's one of the huge problems. It's divided us greatly, I believe, as a society, because we've now also made everybody else wrong, because we're so identified with those thought forms of I have to be right, and the only way I can be right is to make you wrong. The only way I can be bigger is to make you less than. And I think that's just a huge problem. I can't watch them, other than the fact that I have a very unhealthy crush on Anderson Cooper. I try not to watch. He's cute. Look at him. It's adorable.
I know, he is.
I don't think I'm his type, but that's the only reason. I want to know what's going on in the world, but I don't want to be inundated with stuff that just frustrates me. So where do we find that balance? Where do we find that balance of knowing what's going on and being informed and driving ourselves crazy?
Well, part of it is we've stopped teaching critical thinking, which terrifies me, because it actually does, because we've focused a lot on math and science.
Yes.
And I think what's also really funny is people are now starting to try to disprove science. So it's like, wait, how is this even logical that we're putting all this money and energy and forcing kids to learn subjects that they may actually not be good at or have an intelligence for? Because keep in mind, intelligence, I think there's like 9 different forms of intelligence or 7, mm-hmm, something. Like, there's more than 2. Let me just put it that way. But our schools are only teaching a certain amount of intelligence, mm-hmm, and they're focusing on math and science. And then now we're trying to say that what science says is not true. So again, we've stopped teaching critical thinking, and it's mind-boggling. And as a result of that, we're being run by our emotional brain, which, if my understanding of the brain is accurate, wherever the blood goes in the brain is what is the dominant. So the emotional part of the brain is in the middle, and the logic and reasoning is in the front. So if all the blood's going into the emotions, it doesn't have enough to go into the front part of the brain. So we're being run by our emotions.
Which is interesting, because you talked before kind of about the thought and feelings, right? And this is, mm-hmm, one of the ways that I've kind of had it explained to me too. So we'd kind of like to get your feeling on this, you know, is there's some condition or some fact that happens, and we then, that's separate from us, right? Because like you said, you know, we're kind of separate from what's going on out there, but we then have some thought and or feeling about that. And it depends on what it is, right? That if it's a fight or flight thing, then the amygdala is going to kick in before the cortex, you know, does. And sometimes we almost have feelings before we have thoughts, at least conscious thoughts.
Right.
Right. But we tell ourselves some thought based on our perception of that fact or condition. that would then end up leading to feelings, right? And so I think it's very interesting, like what you said, is that if we're always kind of in this fear state, it's like the blood flow goes back, right, into the emotional state. And as a result, we're never able to really kind of process or use those critical thinking things to say, now, just a minute, hold it. Of course, that doesn't make any sense, right? You know, like somebody, you know, the always and never kind of stuff, like the example you gave before, we pigeonhole ourselves into that without ever really stopping and critically thinking, well, hold it, that's not always true, right? And an example of this that somebody told me was, you know, when people ask you, what color's the sky? most people are going to say blue, right? The sky is blue. But is it always blue?
No.
No. But we have to stop and actually think past what our first kind of reaction is. So how do you kind of work with your clients to kind of help them through that? Because this is what we're all going through this, right? We're watching the news or doing something. We're having a thought about it that's leading to a feeling. And a lot of times there's kind of like this causal loop and rumination that goes on. So how do you get out of that?
So one of the things that I try and do is teach psychological flexibility or cognitive flexibility, which is trying to look at things instead of an either or, but an and. So for example, yes, in our culture, you know, there are people that are full of hate. And yes, there are people that band together and are bonded by their hate. But it doesn't mean that every single type of person that looks a certain way is bonded by hate, or if people have had a bad experience, that it's always going to be this way. So this is where, if I was going to work with somebody in the Aryan Nation, right, which I don't think that would be good for me personally, because quarter Jewish, so probably wouldn't work. Probably wouldn't come in, but just for conversation's sake, right? One of the things, well, first of all, as a therapist, I don't actually reveal any of my background, right?
Of course,
and so my last name. So what would be actually kind of funny is if I had somebody that came in with depression, we had a relationship, and then they felt comfortable enough to talk to me about all the things that they hate. That would be a beautiful moment where I could actually say, well, what if you met somebody that you liked that actually ended up having a history of these types of people that you don't like? And then, you know, and they would probably say, well, I've never put myself in a situation like this. So granted, a situation like this, I would definitely go with some trepidation. But the part of it that's really important is the relationship. So when I have a relationship with somebody, I can get them to expand a little bit because I'm not judging them. And so part of, I think, what will help us get out of it is if you are with somebody that's very adamant and judgmental, to provide them this space of just listening and just being curious about, well, how did you come to this? How did you come to hating this group of people? Did every single person you come across treat you poorly? You know, it's like, have you had any experiences? Like, please tell me about the pain that you've experienced. Mm-hmm. Because I feel behind every anger, you know, anger is a secondary emotion. So what's underneath it? Mm. And that's where I try to work with people is, especially with the hatred and the anger, it's like, what's underneath that? What's the pain? And I think that's what's really challenging is people are afraid to be vulnerable. You know, Tara Brach does a great podcast and meditation, and she does a lot on vulnerability. And the importance of intimacy is the key is being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of people nowadays are scared to relax in their thinking, relax in their feelings, because it brings up vulnerability. And then when you have the news blasting that we're going to get hit by missiles in North Korea, we've got immigrants coming in from all ends of the borders. Like there's like, you know, an attack on everything. Mm-hmm. There's a crisis of everything. It's like, how do we feel safe in our own skin in our world? And that's right. Where it's trying to, you know, Jason, circling back to what you do about the news, it's like, you kind of have to question, well, what's going on in my immediate environment? Right. What is going on immediately? You know, it's like, how true is what they're saying? Like I walk outside and there aren't people trying to hurt me. You know, it's like, I cross the street and I see people that are, you know, from a different culture, and they're saying hello to me and they're being friendly. Mm-hmm. And instead of where the news would have me believe every single person that is coming in of certain countries are rapists or drug addicts or, you know, murderers. And it's like, no, that's not the case.
Yeah.
We're all human.
Right. I was just in El Paso and took a morning and walked to the border. And I stood there and I was seriously expecting to see hordes of people like at a football game, like rushing forward and trying to get into the country. You know what I saw were moms and their kids walking across the border to go to school. I saw Hispanic guys heading to open their store for work. I saw people on that half exactly the way we looked on this half. And yeah. When I traveled to the Middle East and I flew into Jordan, because that was the first place I went, I got a window seat because I'm like, I want to see what this looks like from the air. And I expected to see bombs going off in the distance. I expected it to look like some newscast. And instead I landed, and frankly, it looked just like Santa Barbara. Mountains, ocean, little airport that looked kind of like Burbank. I'm like, where am I? I'm exactly where I am here. It's just slightly different. And we all have differences. No one is exactly the same. No culture is exactly the same. And we can focus on those differences, or we can focus on that sameness, which is they just want to work. They just want to make a living. They just want to be with their families. They just want to love and be loved. It's not that difficult, but we're demonizing these other people because that gives us more an identity. Rather than this identity, like you said, of we're all humans, we watch news that validates our experience. We have opinions that validate our experience. And why question that? Because in questioning it, it makes us wrong. We lose that thought form identity, and our ego does not like that.
And I think that's, again, if we can get out of the right versus wrong and just sit in that space of curiosity, it's like, I'm curious. I think that's where people will have more relief.
Yeah.
Because I think there is that essence of holding on tightly to something and trying to control it, which ultimately will bring up anxiety.
Well, it's wanting to control things that we cannot control.
Absolutely. Right?
And so again, I think that's where, you know, whatever these stimuli are, there's nothing you can do about it. And so if there really is nothing that you can do about it, then there's no need to have the anxiety about it, because you can't change the outcome. You just have to let it be what it is. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody has anxiety about whether or not the sun's going to come up tomorrow.
Well, somebody might.
Well, maybe,
but here's the funny part, though. People are uncomfortable with the feelings of anxiety, right? Because then it's a physical sensation. Like it kind of feels like a tornado in your head. And the thing is if we could actually teach people how to experience and cope with their feelings, and because a feeling will come up and out. If you look at a kid having a temper tantrum, you know, they'll have their feeling and then it's done and they'll go on and they'll totally like move on. That's how our feelings are supposed to be. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to have them, feel them, release them, and then we move on. Somehow our brain has figured out ways to hold on to things, which is kind of brilliant and torturing at the same time. But I think part of it is people are uncomfortable in their own skin. Mm-hmm. And so the feelings of anxiety become so big that the need to want to control it, or their other thought is, oh God, then I have to experience it. They'd rather try to control it than actually experience it, which if you can experience it and work through it, you'll find more relief and more freedom.
Right. Well, and also since our brain is wired to look for potential problems, to look for things that might go wrong, it's great to think, oh, what if that goes wrong? And then you let that go. The problem is when you ruminate on that and your day is spent with that pre-wired situation, because that whole what fires together wires together thing. So the more we have those anxious thoughts, the more it leads to more and more anxious thoughts. So it isn't it's to a certain extent about breaking that cycle of those thoughts, getting off that crazy train of negativity and thinking about something else, which is why when people get distracted, their pain goes away. They don't feel bad anymore. That's when I was having that really low day of depression after my father passed away. You're like, be gentle with yourself. Distract yourself. And I sat in the airport and I went through magazines and I pulled articles out of magazines, and it was enough distraction to get me out of that thought, that thinking, that mood, that emotional state eventually just faded away. It didn't stick with me. I didn't let it stick with me.
My ideal education would be that we would actually teach children, teens, adults, how to be friends with their mind. How to actually work with thoughts, work with feelings, understand it, so that way they can have more potential of their mind instead of getting caught in the rumination of thoughts or trying to, you know, run away from thoughts. Or, but I think if there was a way that we could encourage people to understand their mind, I think we'd have a whole different world.
Yeah.
Well, the whole irony too is, right, as far as the mammals that are, you know, walking on this earth, you know, humans have that cognitive ability with their mind. Mm-hmm. Right. But if we're not using it, that's what's sad. Right. But we have to actually have that relationship and understand it. If not, if we're just letting the emotional part of the brain kind of kick in all the time and we're not actually using our consciousness, then it's kind of like a waste of our evolution.
Absolutely. In a way, right?
Because effectively what we're doing is almost regressing back to, you know, before we had this consciousness. And so again, we need to take those pauses, do whatever it is. I mean, I love breathing exercises or other stuff like that to distract. I mean, I actually have a Rubik's Cube sitting here on my desk, right? Because every so often I can do one side of it. Okay. I can never do the whole thing, but
I can't either. My brother can. Okay. I cannot.
But the reason it's there is because when I feel like I get stuck or I want to start ruminating on something, I move. I actually start moving my hands to try to get myself out of that thing, right? So whatever you do, a little chair dancing, a little telling a joke, I mean, ripping articles out of magazines or pictures, whatever, right? Doing something to try to get out of that pattern is going to help us, because it becomes a sinkhole down.
Yes.
You know, if we don't stop. Yeah.
No, I agree. And I think the other thing that I think is super helpful is having animals. You know, I think having just an animal, because they can't really talk back to you, but they can sense your energy. So all of a sudden, if you're feeling a certain way and then your animal's acting a certain way, it's kind of a nice mirror back. And at least for me, I have this puppy and I love it because he teaches me so much. Because when I'm stressed out, he's stressed out. And then I realize, okay. And so it's like, what's great is me calming him down is calming me down. And I have to actually take a look and just go, okay, what is my responsibility? What is my part? And I think that's another key thing is when we're doing this type of work, the first question is awareness, you know, wait, what's going on? And then to kind of the invite is to look at to the thoughts and go, okay, what am I believing is true? What is my feeling going on? And how can I take responsibility about, you know, how can I change this? Mm-hmm. And if I can't change it, then how can I just be with it and know that there's nothing I can do and surrender?
Oh, surrender.
That surrender is not something that people want to do.
Surrender is scary because it's that unknown. Scary. It's that getting in that raft and going down that little river around the bend. And you're like, I don't know what's around there. I guess I just have to ride.
But this is where trusting in oneself, right? So the surrender then actually goes hand in hand with trust. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think a lot of people are missing. And what's great is if you look in psychology, Erickson did this development kind of graph. And the first thing that we learn as infants is trust versus mistrust. And I think if there's a wound in that and you don't have that sense of trusting within yourself and the world around you, and that's wounded, then it's really hard to surrender because you're like an infant, like freaking out. Like, am I going to actually get fed if I'm hungry? Am I going to get my diapers changed? You know, it's like there's some primal things that have happened to a lot of people. The great thing is the brain is, you can change it. Like you can work and change your experience for the future if you can recognize it. But I think people are more wanting to be in their ego sense, which is outside of themselves, than their soul sense, which is more within and who they are and the essence of their being.
Right.
Well, I think it's funny because as you said that, right? And Kathy, you're going to have to correct me on the exact definition of stress, right? But it's when we feel that you know, resources at our disposal are not sufficient to deal with whatever we see ahead of us, right? I didn't say that as succinctly.
When our demands exceed our resources.
Demands exceed our resources.
That demands are going to exceed our resources. Yeah.
And so it's interesting because you bring up trust and distrust, you know, that we do that with other people, but it made me even think about ourselves internally, right? Mm-hmm. Is that probably a lot of this stress that's coming on us is because we distrust our ability to actually deal with it.
Yep.
And right. So actually trusting in ourselves and realizing, you know, again, it's like we all go through hard times in our life. Are we going to get through this next one? Probably, because haven't we gone through some other hard times before? And what happened? We came through it, right? So
we're still here.
And so because we've done it before in the past, of course we can do it again in the future. But it is, I just kind of got that as, you know, maybe some of this is, again, it's on us and trying to adjust our thoughts, adjust our feelings to actually trust ourselves and do that surrender and realize everything is going to be okay. Cause we've done it before.
Absolutely. We can do it again. And if you don't trust yourself, then you're going to look to outside sources like the media and go, oh, they must be right.
Right. They know so much more than me.
And that's what creates even a stronger home. Yes. Hmm. And they really don't.
Hmm. Absolutely.
They have lots of opinions.
And we know what we say about people and opinions. Jason knows. Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has them. And sometimes they stink.
Yes.
We're raw and unscripted on the show.
This is true.
Last year at this time, after my dad had his heart attack, I was talking to a friend and I was very upset and I started crying and he gave me a big hug and he said, you're going to be okay. And I said, yeah, but what if my dad's not okay? And he said, but even if he's not okay, you're going to be okay. And there was just that profound, and I told him about it later and he goes, that was pretty profound. Did I say that? I'm like, yes, you did. You'd totally forgotten that it even came up with that. But it's true. It's like, we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. We can do the pattern interrupt and trust in ourselves. And I want to have a whole conversation about trust in ourselves, but we ran out of time again because this half hour flew by. Jason, any last thoughts? We'll end with any last thoughts from you, Tina, and we'll wrap it. Jason has no more thoughts.
Jason, I have no more thoughts.
You have no more thoughts?
Cool.
No, there is. I hope one day I get to come back because there's an area that I think where people. The stem of all this is something that Irvin Yalom has brought up in his existential psychotherapy, which is death anxiety. And so I think part of all of this stems from that part of us that knows that our time here is temporary and we don't know how to manage that. So I think I want to leave with that is actually a thing that goes on that doesn't get enough airtime in psychology. And I think he was pretty brilliant to come up with that. Kind of area to look at. And I think that actually really does stem with a lot of our internal anxiety and trust is the fact of we fear death and how we handle it at different areas in our life.
Yeah, I agree. And you can distill stuff down. It's like with public speaking, well, what scares you about that? This scares me. Okay, but what scares you about that? And if you get it down, people are afraid they're going to die.
Yeah. I mean, everybody that's what it comes at down the to. End of it goes yeah. to, I'm going to die.
I might die. Yeah, what if I die? Well, okay. We're all going to die. I hope I didn't just ruin anybody's day, but it's going to happen. 10 out of 10 of us just read the study. We're going to die. Wasn't blind, you know, wasn't double blind placebo control, but I'm pretty sure it's true.
It is. That is a fact. That I will say is a fact.
Well, isn't it right? The only two things that are true or whatever is death and taxes.
Death and taxes.
They're certain is death and taxes, right?
Death and taxes, yeah.
And if you're the president, you can get around the tax part.
He can't get around the death part though. He thinks he can, but he can't.
So many things I want to say right there. Yeah. Anyway, okay. And on that note, feelings are not facts, as we've said before. It's one of the presuppositions of NLP. And this has been such a fabulous conversation. This is why I knew we had to have you on. So Dr. Tina Donaldson, thank you for your time. We will have you back to talk about the whole death thing because I think that's actually very wise. We need to go with that conversation. I'm Kathy Gruber. I can be reached at kathygruber.com.
And I'm Jason Mefford. I can be reached at jasonmefford.com. So go out, unlock your limitless potential, And we'll see you on a future episode of the Fire and Earth podcast. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.